continue on with today's board meeting. We'll go to agenda item 6B, which is the strategic plan priorities update as of June 2020. Paul.
Thank you, President Sullivan, members of the board, good morning. We have a PowerPoint on this I would like to go through. So let's start that out on slide 2. Just a little background on the strategic plan. As you'll recall, we adopted the strategic plan in June of 2019. It is a 3-year strategic plan. It really overlaps nicely with our budget. And not only do we have the strategic plan, but we also have that flows out of the strategic plan, specific strategic priorities. These are more projects, programs, tactical things that we take advantage of to implement the strategic plan, and I will go through those in a moment. So the way the strategic plan is organized is we start out with what we call kind of our standards of excellence. I'll go over those in a moment. That is kind of our organizing principles for the strategic plans. Plan and what falls out of those is strategic priorities and a strategic priorities project list. So in Exhibit A of your board package, we have this very large matrix. This matrix is quite detailed. It's a 15-page tabular summary that includes all the specific projects and programs in which we're undertaking. This tracks the very specific activities that flow out of the strategic plan. So for example, if you look at the matrix that's included as Exhibit A, it has the category. So for example, reliable service and water supply reliability. It has the detailed description of a specific project or program, provides a status and an update, and it also provides a target completion date and, you know, which department and which executive in the organization is responsible for that, so the lead staff. So it really becomes a nice tracking mechanism that we use to look at the strategic priorities that I'll very briefly mention today. So in summary, 28 strategic priorities were carried over from the prior strategic plan. 19 priorities were added in this 2019 version of the strategic plan, and then we're planning and proposing to add 2 new priorities today. It should be pointed out that, as you know, many of our projects are multi-year efforts, and so they appear perhaps in 2 strategic planning documents or bridge over 2 strategic planning documents, and that's not unusual. This slide, slide 4, talks about how it's organized, how the plan is organized. It is organized, as I mentioned, by standards of excellence. That includes highly reliable water, wastewater, and recycled water, protection of public health, public and environmental health, superior customer service, sound planning, operational efficiency, fiscal responsibility and appropriate investment, being an exemplary employer, and then effective communication, advocacy, and community partnerships. So if you think about what I just described in those bullet points, virtually everything we do as an organization falls under one of those standards of excellence. So it really makes a nice organizing format for the strategic planning document. So what I want to go through now is I'll go through some highlights in the strategic plan. And the strategic priorities, where we are right now. I'm starting out on slide 5 in water supply diversity and reliability. There's several of those that are listed, and the numbers included on the slides are the reference to Exhibit A and a reference number in case you want to see the detail on those. Do want to point out a couple of things on that. Of course, Paris 2 desalter program, active construction project, the integrated resources plan below that, METS integrated resources plan. You'll hear about that today with a more detailed presentation. And also under that item, the regional infrastructure collaboration. What that is the EM11 connection to the south, the acquisition of the easements and the pipelines and potentially from the Metropolitan Water District, and some of our long-term planning for transmission of imported water. Under the next category, the strategic and I guess a continuation of water supply diversity and reliability, course center in that is the Paris North Groundwater Contamination Remediation Prevention Program. As Laura mentioned in her presentation on the 2021 budget, we now have a very clear schedule for that program. So we incorporated that into the 2021 budget with the receipt of the $44.5 million grant. We're really looking forward to that project and very excited about moving that forward. Below that, under water use efficiency, the landscape transformation initiatives, we've been working with the planning committee on that, and we'll be bringing back some additional items. Next, under permitting and regulatory compliance on page 7 is the climate action plan. We've briefed the board on this previously. The principal goal of this is it will substantially streamline our CEQA preparation processes because we will be able to evaluate impacts, climate impacts associated with different projects. And so that is forecast to be completed in early 2021. Under superior customer service, our strategic priorities as listed on slide 8, one of the things I want to point out there is a completed item, and that's our business process programs for managing compliance with SB 998. As you'll recall, that was a little challenge we had, which dealt with delinquencies and customer practices and policies we needed to be put in place. That was completed in February on schedule with the requirements of the statute. Also under technology, the evaluate secure email billing notifications, that was completed last year. We have that access available through the My Account portal, and so that was a completed item that's being taken off our list. Under sound planning and operational efficiency on slide 9, strategic priorities there I want to point out is a new one we've added, and that's battery storage. You'll see that under energy independence. We have worked on a feasibility study. We also entered into an MOU with a vendor to submit for the SGIP incentive funding. That was done by lottery. We'll be updating the board on that. We were not successful in the lottery, but we have redone the feasibility study for battery storage and will continue to look at that. When we originally initiated our solar power generation expansion of our solar power generation program, or phase two of that program, we briefly looked at battery power. The economics weren't there. They're getting better over time. And again, we entered into an MOU with Tesla to submit for those credits. And so we'll be giving the board an update on that fairly quickly. Under sound planning and operational efficiency related to maintenance, I want to point out a couple of things. One, you'll see under potable water pump station optimization, maintenance, we optimized the pumping and looked at that, evaluated that to reduce energy costs. That was completed. It is coming off the list. But we've also added a new item, and that new item is pump motor vibration monitoring. This is for our over 300 horsepower pumps. The intent of this is really to help on the preventive maintenance side and to be able to monitor vibrations in those motors as a precursor to more serious failures. And so the idea is we do want to put a program together through our maintenance group to do that, and so that is a new item. Under fiscal responsibility and appropriate investment on page 11, I do want to point out the connection fee, our FPC study. We're looking at getting that wrapped up at the end of the calendar year. That's our goal. That schedule may shift a little bit because of other priorities, but generally that's an item we're focusing on under that. Under exemplary employer, slide 12, of course, the highlight there is the completion of the labor negotiations and the execution of the labor MOU in April of this and we've taken that off the list in April of this year. That's with IBEW 1436. Also, that included the final piece of the classification and compensation study, which we're very pleased to get done as well. Under slide 13, under effective communication, advocacy, and community partnerships, a couple things to point out there. I just mentioned examples under advocacy in my report under the legislation on firefighting fixtures and water for fire flows, SB 1386. I think that's an example of kind of how active we are in the advocacy front. Also, if you look at the following page under advocacy, failing water system governance legislation, this is SB 414, the bill that we've co-sponsored with CMUA, Senator Caballero is carrying, which we hope to get over the goal line this year. So we have several initiatives under communication advocacy and community partnerships, which I think have been very successful. And of course, we're also seeing a rapid increase in our social media footprint, and we are implementing new programs such as our Latino Community Outreach Program. So the summary and recap on the 2019 to 21 strategic plan, we're making fantastic progress. I'm very pleased to report. We've completed or substantially completed 5 of the high priority strategic priorities. We have 12 more. We're anticipating to be completed by the end of 2020. We've added 2 new priorities that I mentioned earlier, the battery storage as well as the pump motor vibration monitoring. We are achieving good progress and are tracking progress on all the priorities. There is an additional priority that we are working on with the administrative committee that will be brought to the board in July, and that is to look at uses of unclaimed monies and other sources for potential low-income customer assistance program, and we've been coordinating with the committee on that, and we'll bring something for the board's consideration in July. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions on the strategic priorities and strategic plan.
The board have any questions?
I just want to say great progress. I mean, it's very impressive to see what we're ticking off there.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I agree.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. With that, let's go to agenda item 6C, which is Metropolitan's 2020 Integrated Resources Plan process. Linnea,
good
welcome.
Morning, President morning. Sullivan and members of the board. Nice to see and hear all of you this morning. It seems like so long since I've been here. So this morning, I'm going to be providing you an update on Metropolitan Water District's 2020 Integrated Resources Plan process. Been so long, I forgot how to move the mouse. All right, let me start with a little bit of background here on slide number 2. In simple terms, integrated resources planning is a process that identifies resource needs to meet expected demands over a long-range planning horizon. And integrated resources planning really got its roots in the energy sector. And it made a shift from simply identifying new supply to meet resource demands to also incorporating demand management and conservation measures. And it became more prevalent in the water industry in the 90s, which is when Metropolitan first embarked on its initial integrated resources plan. And through that initial plan, they acknowledged both environmental and institutional constraints that needed to be addressed in order to ensure reliability, affordability, water quality, diversity and flexibility. And in Met's own words, they described their IRP process as a process that pursues reliability and affordability as essential outcomes. Through that process, the plan set targets for new local water supply development, water use efficiency, average year expectations from both the Colorado River and the State Water Project. But what it does not do is signal for Metropolitan to build or pay for any specific initiative or project, nor does it address emergency situations. Those are taken care of through other emergency preparedness plans. On slide number 3, we show the history of Metropolitan's planning, integrated resource planning processes. As I mentioned, their first plan was developed in the 90s, in 1996. And earlier in the 90s, Metropolitan had embarked on long-range planning, but really formalized the long-range planning into an IRP process in 1996. There have been various updates over the last 25 years, and all dealing with very specific situations that were going on in our Southern California water supply portfolio, including Colorado River cutbacks in the 2000s, state water project restrictions, and then most recently, recession and drought. And so through that process, Metropolitan has learned several things over the past 25 years. And although they recognized that uncertainty had to be part of the planning process and that Metropolitan had to be adaptive to the different occurrences and scenarios that may arise, this uncertainty was really focused on year-to-year hydrologic and weather-based impacts. And it resulted in more of a deterministic forecasting and a single best path forward for forecasting supplies and demands. And so the results of the 2015 IRP was a focus on maintaining Colorado River aqueduct supplies, increasing conservation, stabilizing the state water project, and developing local resources. What they've also learned is that the drivers or the things that are outside of their control were really treated more as predictable forecasts and not the uncertain factors that they really turned out to be. And some of those drivers were the timing of project implementation, both their own projects and local projects, regulatory risk, economic recession and growth, demographic growth, end use customer behavior, as well as extreme weather and hydrology. And so all of these drivers really impacted other project implementation decisions, financial investment, and policy outcomes. And again, in Met's own words, they say a major lesson learned from the planning cycle is that these underlying drivers of supply and demand are not really predictable and that their outcomes have a significant impact on the region's water supply reliability. So moving forward to the 2020 Integrated Resources Plan approach, Metropolitan has defined this approach as really looking at a range of plausible futures. And this will be the first time in Met's long-range planning history that they actually look at a scenario where member agencies may need less regional wholesale water supplies than what's currently available. They've also identified this process as being more policy forward. And when I get to the next graph that shows the process, you'll see it's policy incorporated. I don't know if I'd go as far to say policy forward. And so what it does is, historically in their IRPs, the scenarios and the alternatives were really within the framework of existing policy. And through this process, what they are allowing to happen is for policy to be stretched, pushed, changed through the different scenarios and options that are looked at to really be able to make hopefully some more policy decisions that historically have not been able to achieved through the IRP process. So this is the process flow diagram for the 2020 IRP process. As Paul mentioned in his report this morning, the first step is the development of the drivers of change. And these are really things that are outside of Metropolitan's control. For example, climate change, recession, among others. And that is where Metropolitan is today. As Paul mentioned, there is a survey that all the member agencies will be completing to provide our input on the importance for these drivers of change with respect to regional water supply reliability. In parallel with this survey that's being conducted that will really provide Metropolitan with some qualitative information in terms of the importance to the member agencies, their board, and external stakeholders, Metropolitan will also be doing a quantitative analysis of the drivers of change. And when I say the importance, it's really the impact on supplier demand. There was a lot of feedback through Met's outreach process in terms of what different drivers could be. But in reality, when they're looking at the importance, it's really based, again, on an impact to supply or demand. An example that has been brought up several times, especially by external stakeholders throughout the community, is the affordability of water. Well, that may or may not really have an impact on the demand from the standpoint of you need water. And maybe you can cut down your outdoor water use if it's too expensive. But in reality, it's going to have less of an impact on the demand than, let's say, state legislation for conservation, making conservation a way of life. So that's an example of how Metropolitan will, again, try to quantify those different drivers to really establish the importance level of each of these. And then from there, Metropolitan will establish different scenarios. And in real simple terms, what these scenarios will encompass is something that may look like a scenario that's high demand, high supply. Low demand, low supply. High demand, low supply. Let's see if I can remember how I've said them now. but you get the picture. So then those drivers are really going to be how it's used to actually quantify those different scenarios.
Which one? We said not to that today.
So from there, Metropolitan will then work on testing the performance of these different portfolios. So there's going to be different options that are grouped together to be, in essence, how Metropolitan will achieve the gap or the differences between the supply and the demand. And this is where the process becomes iterative and where the policy discussions come in. So based on the performance of an established portfolio, Metropolitan will adjust and potentially revise that and then retest it. And again, look at the policy decisions and implications associated with being able to meet the region's demands. And then also part of this, the final bow on this is an adaptive management strategy. And through this process, what MET wants to do is identify different signals or triggers or signposts, I think is the term that they're using, to be able to adapt as these plausible futures, as we're getting clues as to what plausible future we may be heading to, and be able to adapt to be able to be reliable. And so right now we're at step one. The MET has put together a draft list of the drivers of change here on slide 8. And again, Paul mentioned some of these this morning. They've organized these into 8 different categories. They've identified, in this draft list, it was 19. I believe they've added a few more since this draft list. I believe we're now in the low 20s. And then they've also tried to document the different input that they've received, both from the member agencies and from the external stakeholders. So the categories are the climate change impacts, economic impacts, legislative and regulatory uncertainties, and a couple of examples of the drivers that they reference or that they've acknowledged are rising sea level, the increasing cost of providing water, also emerging regulatory challenges. The list continues, additional categories including demographic change, federal and state and regional policy direction, technical advances, aging infrastructure, as well as groundwater impairment. So again, a couple of examples of those drivers in each of these categories, changing housing densities, reduced cooperation between state and federal water managers, the increasing availability of decentralized treatment technologies, and potential groundwater losses due to contamination. So some of the feedback that Metropolitan got on this draft list was changing the tone of these to be more neutral. So instead of using descriptors like increasing or decreasing, just using, less descriptive, but just direct potable use, vulnerability of a system, but not using descriptors such as increasing or decreasing, because some feedback was that they should be neutral. They don't necessarily mean it could be a positive or a negative impact on supply or demand. So this figure here represents the schedule, the IRP schedule. So as I mentioned, we're currently in step one, developing of the drivers of change. The triangles, the upside down triangles on this figure represent when member agency input and review will take place. In reality, Metropolitan is really engaging the member agencies throughout the process, both through work groups, technical work groups, as well as participating in additional general manager focused meetings, which I'll touch on a little bit more in the next slide. When Metropolitan first laid out this schedule, they had the Urban Water Management Plan and the Integrated Resources Plan linked, showing that the Integrated Resources Plan would be done by the end of the year in order to support member agencies being able to complete their urban water management plans as they rely on Metropolitan's information. There was a lot of discussion about this at the board and at the member agency levels concerning the rushed feeling like the IRP process would be too rushed, and that it's such an important process that Metropolitan was encouraged to decouple the Urban Water Management Plan and the IRP process, which Metropolitan did agree to. They recognized the sensitivities to the schedule and member agencies wanting to provide meaningful input. And so Metropolitan is going to establish a I don't know how to say it, but I guess a best possible scenario to for use in the urban water management plans while they consider to evaluate additional plausible futures through the IRP process. There are some question marks toward the end of the year as that Met has not indicated a hard stop for this because they do want to allow the iterative process to occur organically without a forced deadline, as long as it's still providing meaningful information. As I mentioned, member agencies and us, we are participating heavily in the process. Director Record is participating as a member of the board. There's also member agency managers meetings that Paul is participating in, as well as a general manager's work group in which agencies are getting together to review and provide input on the process kind of outside of the formal Metropolitan meetings. But Metropolitan has participated in these work groups as well to be able to address more focused questions from these smaller work groups. There's also the member agency technical work groups, again, more of a formal process. Metropolitan is also engaged on external outreach to the rest of the community, including environmental justice groups, other retail agencies that maybe aren't member agencies. This is their opportunity to participate. And I believe Paul mentioned a couple weeks ago that at the first stakeholder meeting that they had, it was conducted in two sessions, they had over 500 participants. So it was very, very well attended. And then we'll also be sharing information as we go with Rancho California Water District and Lake Hemet, and providing them an opportunity to participate in those stakeholder meetings. At EMWD, we also embark on long-range planning efforts, and we have our integrated resources plan update currently in progress as well. We'll be looking at things like regional growth, impact of hydrology on water supplies. We really want to be able to answer questions regarding timing of our water banking, how we use our banked credits, and so forth. So again, looking at our long-term water supply reliability and what we need to do to move forward. And then we also have our 2020 Urban Water Management Plan that will be beginning here in the next month or so. And this is consistent with our strategic priority to ensure water supply diversity and reliability. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Have any questions?
Very good presentation.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll just make a comment, President Sullivan.
Yes.
It was a good presentation, Linnea, right on target. I think I've mentioned this before, but one of the things going into this process that we agreed at Met to do was to look at demand management funding. Currently, we're not collecting anything through the rates under the water stewardship charge, so we don't have a identified revenue stream to provide money for conservation and local projects, and that's one of the most important things that needs to come out of this is what does the future look like. It's unusual for an IRP, but at this point in time it's critical that we address that very big issue. So I'll be interested to see how that comes about.
Yeah, I think that the district's fortunate to have Director Record on this board, and Metropolitan being a senior member of that board, not in terms of age, but in terms of experience, as to help guide Met through some of this. And it's also a benefit to our district. And, you know, it was a great presentation this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, let's go to agenda item 7, which is receive and file. I'll accept a motion in a second for approval of items 7A through 7B.
I'll move approval. This is Dave.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. We'll go to the agenda item 8, which is the calendar review. Nicole?
Good morning, President Sullivan, members of the board. I have one addition to the calendar this morning that's not listed that I'd like to review first. The board has been invited to take part in a policy conversation with Erica Suarez, who is the policy advisor to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Vance Goyek and Associates has set that up for tomorrow at noon Pacific time. If anyone would like to participate.
Is it noon Pacific time?
It is. It's 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Sure.
Yeah.
If you can send over, you know, how we get into it.
Absolutely.
I'd be interested, too.
Thank you, Director Pauly. Okay, so going to the calendar, the first page, on June 25th, WRCOG will be holding a Future Forward webinar. This is in place of this year's General Assembly,
mm-hmm.
And it begins at 9:30 a.m., continues through 2:30 p.m. This invitation was emailed to the board last week, and we had Directors Pauly and Slauson sign up if anyone else is interested in participating.
I probably should.
Thank you, Director Sullivan.
Yeah, if you would just send it over.
Yeah, if you could send it over to me as well.
Yes, Director Slauson.
Thank you.
Thank you. Moving to page 2, we have the board's master calendar for today through July 1st. Beginning with tomorrow, we have the board executive committee meeting starting at 7:30 a.m. for Directors Slauson and Sullivan.
Yes.
Thank you. On Friday, June 19th at 7:30 a.m., the Riverside County Water Task Force will hold a virtual event. The flyer for that event is attached. It's been updated with the speakers, which will include Matt Melendrez from EMWD. Director Sullivan is confirmed to attend.
Going to attend, too, I think.
Thank you, Director Pauly.
And Director Slauson plans to attend.
Thank you, Director Slauson. And for Director Sullivan's calendar, tomorrow we have the discussion with Assembly Member Eduardo Garcia's office. I believe that time is pending a change.
Still haven't done it. It was going to be done for Friday, I think.
Yeah, and we're still waiting to hear.
Okay.
It could move two or three times between now and then. Who knows? Yeah, so it is not tomorrow.
So we'll keep an eye on it for Friday.
So it should be taken off the calendar tomorrow. I'll work with Danielle to see when that's going to be on Friday.
Thank you. On Tuesday, June 23rd, the Metropolitan Water District Committee meetings will be held for Director Record's calendar. And on Tuesday, June 23rd as well, we have an outreach meeting with April Cody for Director Pauly's calendar at 7:30 a.m. And at 3:30 p.m. on Tuesday, the 23rd, the Domenigoni stakeholder meeting will be held at EMWD for Director Pauly's calendar. On June 24th and 25th, the Water Reuse California will hold its virtual conference, and Director Sullivan is confirmed to participate. On Wednesday, June 24th, Director Sullivan has an update meeting with the General Manager at 7:30 a.m. in Paris. And Thursday, June 25th, we've gone over the WRCOG Future Forward webinar. That's at 9:30 a.m. And the Board Operations and Engineering Committee meeting will be held at 3:30 p.m. on the 25th for Director Slauson and Director Sullivan. The upcoming board meetings and committee meetings are on schedule, and just one note for the July Planning Committee meeting. It has been confirmed now that we'll be moving that meeting to Wednesday, July 8th, and that's for Directors Corona and Record.
That's good.
Thank you. On the last page of your calendar report, we have the upcoming interagency meetings and out-of-office schedule. Are there any additions to the calendar or questions? That concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, we'll go to the individual directors' meetings. Director Corona.
Can you hear me okay now?
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
Okay, good. I called back in on the phone. Okay, so I attended both the EMWD and Rancho California Water District meeting and the EVMWD meetings, and those were both good meetings. Had my meeting with general manager, which is good. And also I attended the Rancho California Water District board meeting, and the highlight of that meeting was Nick Kness's report on the pipeline breakup in Moreno Valley. And they enjoyed that, and they even brought up more discussion later on in the meeting about the fast action response trailer there. So that's my report.
Thank you. Director Pauley.
Yes, I attended the EMWD Elsinore meeting, and I think we, as Joe always does, gave him some great information on future of Quail Valley, which I think they really appreciate us working on, and some items that met, and just general discussions. Very good meeting. Cal Desal Executive Committee meeting I attended yesterday. I volunteered to be on the new member outreach committee to find some members, both from the public sector and especially an emphasis on finding some new private sector meetings, or I'm sorry, members for Cal Desal. And that's my report.
Thank you. Director Record.
Yes, MWD meetings, we always have a call the week before with the chair of finance and myself as vice chair to go over the agenda. Standing committee and board meetings, you have a very thorough report prepared by Jolene. I would note that got on the MET agenda the legislation to try to put Central Basin under the control of the Water Replenishment District, and we received over 2 hours of public comment before the board meeting. That was that. MWD meetings. As Corona, Director Corona mentioned, the MWD and Rancho California ad hoc committee meetings, I think we have a good relationship, and those are productive and positive meetings. Joint Inland and Orange County Caucus, good review of MET agendas, and a good update with the general manager.
Thank you. Director Slauson.
Yes, I have a update with Paul Jones, and it's always enlightening and a lot more detail than we would normally get, especially on upcoming programs. Yesterday, I also attended the SAPA commission meeting, and we approved the investment policy, the rate resolution for the Inland Empire Brine Line, and retained a social media consultant for the Emerging Constituents Task Force. And then we had updates from all the roundtables and task forces. That's it.
Thank you. I did have my update with Paul Jones on June the 4th, and like everyone says, it's always very informative to do a very quiet one-on-one with that on what goes on at the district. I did attend the EMWD Texas Water Community Teleconference, and I believe that we are moving a lot of things forward, and also with the assistance of Jolene, who I think is very positive. I did attend the virtual Menifee Valley Chamber Regional Economic Impact Breakfast. I thought it was very interesting with a number of statistics that they had as to the what's going on in this particular region. I thought it was very informative. And then I did attend the Southern California Water Committee Water Policy webinar, which actually featured Tim Quinn. I thought it was a very informative time. It was nice to see Tim on this conference webinar. Obviously, it generated a lot of interest because my recollection was there was over 220 people on this virtual conference, and I thought it was very well done. I particularly enjoyed listening to him because Tim actually emailed me his 40-page paper that he did that had some of this stuff on it. So that's all of my comments. Do we have any director comments or future agenda items? I have just one question. I've been through, what Kevin Pearson puts out. One that really has struck my interest the last few days is the court hearing at IID what the ag or the irrigators down there, Mr. Abadi and his group, is now at an appeals court. And what really struck me was, how long this has probably been going on for the irrigators, and, what is the subsequent impact that may happen if this is upheld to water going to San Diego? So maybe at some point, council can give us a... Not necessarily today, but sometime in the future, it'd be interesting just to...
I can follow up on that, President Sullivan. Yeah, I think that would be interesting to hear.
Yeah, we'll look forward to it. Thank you. Okay, with that, we have no other comments. And, Council, we have any reason for a closed session today?
We do not, Mr. Chair.
With that, we'll adjourn the meeting to a regular meeting on Wednesday, July the 1st, 2020 at 9 a.m. Thank you very much.
Thank you.